A man who's allowed the two swords should be able to use them, not just wear them, eh?
He asked thinly.
Please, I don't understand.
Omi said it again, more simply.
Ah, understand. Yes, it's better.
Yes. Lord Yabu said, now that you're completely samurai, that you should begin to learn much that we take for granted. How to act as a second at a seppuku, for example. Even to prepare for your own seppuku, as we're all obliged to do. Yes, Anjin-san, you should learn to use the swords. Very necessary for a samurai to know how to use and honor his sword, ne?
Blackthorn did not understand half the words, but he knew what Omi was saying.
At least, he corrected himself uneasily, I know what he's saying on the surface.
Yes, true, important, he told him. Please, one day you teaches. Sorry, you teach, perhaps. Please. I honored.
Yes, I'd like to teach you, Anjin-san.
Blackthorn's hackles rose at the implied threat in Omi's voice.
Watch it, he admonished himself. Don't start imagining things.
Thank you. Now walk there, please. Little time. You go with, yes?
Very well, Anjin-san. But we'll ride. I'll join you shortly.
Omi walked up the hill into his own courtyard. Blackthorn ordered a servant to saddle his horse and mounted awkwardly from the right side, as was custom in Japan and China.
Don't think there'd be much future in letting him teach me swordsmanship, he told himself,
his right hand nudging the concealed pistol safer, its pleasing warmth reassuring. This confidence vanished when Omi reappeared. With him were four mounted samurai. Together they all cantered up the broken road toward the plateau. They passed many samurai companies in full marching gear, armed, under their officers, spear pennants fluttering. When they crested the rise, they saw that the entire musket regiment was drawn up outside the camp, in route order, each man standing beside his armed horse, a baggage train in the rear, Yabu, Naga, and their officers in the van. The rain began to fall heavily.
All troops go?
Blackthorn asked, perturbed, and reined in his horse.
Yes. Go spar with Toranaga-sama, Omi-san? I don't know.
Blackthorn's sense of survival warned him to ask no more questions. But one needed to be answered.
And Buntaro-sama?
He asked indifferently.
He with us tomorrow, Omi-san? No. He's already gone. This morning he was in the square when you left the tea house. Didn't you see him, near the tea house?
Blackthorn could read nothing untoward in Omi's face.
No, not see. So sorry. He goes spar, too? I suppose so. I'm not sure.
The rain dripped off Omi's conical hat, which was tied under his chin. His eyes were almost hidden.
Now, why did you want me to come here with you? Show place, like I say.
Before Omi could say anything more, Blackthorn spurred his horse forward. With his most careful sea sense, he took accurate bearings from memory and went quickly to the exact point over the crevasse. He dismounted and beckoned Omi.
Please!
What is it, eh?
Omi's voice was edged.
Please, here, Omi-san. Alone.
Omi waved his guards away and spurred forward until he towered over Blackthorn.
Nandeska?
He asked, his hand seemingly tightening on his sword.
This place, Toranaga-sama.
Blackthorn could not think of the words, so explained partially with his hands.
Understand? Here, you pulled him out of the earth, ne? So?
Blackthorn looked at him, then deliberately down at his sword, then stared up at him again, saying nothing more. He wiped the rain out of his face.
Nandeska?
Omi repeated more irritably. Still Blackthorn didn't answer. Omi stared down at the crevasse and again at Blackthorn's face. Then his eyes lit up.
Ah, so this! Wakarimasu!
Omi thought a moment, then called out to one of the guards.
Get Mura here at once, with 20 men and shovels!
The samurai galloped off. Omi sent the others back to the village, then dismounted and stood beside Blackthorn.
Yes, Anjin-san, he said. That's an excellent thought. A good idea.
Idea?
What idea?
Blackthorn asked innocently.
Just show place. Think you want no place, ne? So sorry. Don't understand.
Omi said,
Toranaga-sama lost his swords here. Swords very valuable. He'll be happy to get them back. Very happy, ne?
Ah, so. Know my idea, Omi-san? Blackthorn said.
Omi-san idea. Of course. Thank you, Anjin-san. You're a good friend, and your mind's fast. I should have thought of that myself. Yes, you're a good friend, and we'll all need friends for the next few months. War's with us now, whether we want it or not.
Please? So sorry. I don't understand. Speak too fast. Please excuse.
Glad we're friends. You and me. Understand?
Hi. You say war? War now?
Soon. What can we do? Nothing. Don't worry. Toranaga-sama will conquer Ishido and his traitors. That's the truth. Understand? No worry, ne?
Understand. I go now. My house. All right?
Yes. See you at dawn. Again, thank you.
Blackthorn nodded, but he did not leave.
She's pretty, ne? What? Kiku-san.
Blackthorn's legs were slightly apart, and he was poised to jump back and pull out the pistol and aim it and fire it. He remembered with total clarity the unbelievable effortless speed that Omi had used to decapitate the first villager so long ago, and he was ready as best he could be. He reasoned his only safety was to precipitate the matter of Kiku. Omi would never do it. Omi would consider such bad manners unthinkable. And filled with shame at his own weakness, Omi would lock his very un-Japanese jealousy away into a secret compartment. Because it was so alien and shame-filled, this jealousy would fester until, when it was least expected, Omi would explode blindly and ferociously.
Kiku-san,
Omi said.
Hi.
Blackthorn could see that Omi was rocked. Even so, he was glad he had chosen the time and the place.
She's pretty, ne? Pretty? Hi.
The rain increased. The heavy drops spattered the mud. Their horses shivered uncomfortably. Both men were soaked, but the rain was warm and it ran off them.
Yes,
Omi said.
Kiku-san is very pretty.
And followed it with a torrent of words Blackthorn did not fathom.
No words enough now, Omi-san. Not enough to speak clear now,
Blackthorn said.
Later, yes. Not now. Understand?
Omi seemed not to hear. Then he said,
There's plenty of time, Anjin-san. Plenty of time to talk about her. And about you and me and Karma. But I agree. Now is not the time, ne? Think, understand. Yes. Yesterday, not know Omi-san and Kiku-san good friends, he said, pressing the attack. She's not my property. Now know you and her very friends. Now leave. This matter is closed. The woman is nothing. Nothing.
Stubbornly, Blackthorn stayed where he was.
Next time I... This conversation is over. Didn't you hear? Finished. Iye. Iye, by God.
Omi's hand went for his sword. Blackthorn leaped back 2 paces without realizing it. But Omi did not draw his sword, and Blackthorn did not pull out his pistol. Both men readied, though neither wanted to begin.
What do you want to say, Anjin-san? Next time, first I ask about Kiku-san. If Omi-san say yes, yes. If no, no. Understand? Friend to friend, ne?
Omi relaxed his sword hand slightly.
I repeat, she's not my property. Thank you for showing me this place, Anjin-san. Goodbye.
Friend?
Of course.
Omi walked over to Blackthorn's horse and held the bridle. Blackthorn swung into the saddle. He looked down at Omi. If he could have got away with it, he knew he would have blown the samurai's head off right now. That would be his safest course.
Goodbye, Omi-san, and thank you. Goodbye, Anjin-san.
Omi watched Blackthorn ride off and did not turn his back until he was over the rise. He marked the exact place in the crevasse with some stones and then, in turmoil, squatted on his haunches to wait, oblivious of the deluge. Soon Mura and the peasants arrived, bespattered with mud.
Torunaga-sama fell into the crevasse exactly at this point, Mura. His swords are buried here. Bring them to me before sunset.
Yes, Omi-sama.
If you'd had any brains, if you were interested in me, your liege lord, you would have done it already.
Please excuse my stupidity.
Omi rode off. They watched him briefly, then spread themselves out in a circle around the stones and began to dig. Mura dropped his voice.
Uo, you'll go with the baggage train. Yes, Mura-san, but how? I'll offer you to the Anjin-san. He won't know any different. But his consort, Oko, she will.
Uo whispered back.
She's not going with him. I hear her burns are bad. She's to go by ship to Edo later. You know what to do? Seek out the Holy Father privately. Answer any questions. Yes.
Mura relaxed and began to talk normally.
You can go with the Anjin-san, Uo. He'll pay well. Make yourself useful, but not too useful, or he'll take you all the way to Edo.
Uo laughed.
Hey, I hear Edo's so rich, everyone pisses into silver pots, even Etta. And the women have skins like seafoam, with no pubics at all.
Is that true, Mura-san?
Another villager asked. They've no short hair?
Edo was just a stinking little fishing village. Nothing as good as Anjiro, when I was there the first time,
Mura told them, without stopping digging.
That was with Torunaga-sama, when we were all hunting down the Beppu. We took more than 3,000 heads between us. As to pubics, all the girls I've known had them, except one from Korea. But she said she'd had them plucked, one by one. What some women will do to attract us, eh?
Someone said.
Yes, but I'd like to see that,
Ninjin said toothlessly.
Yes, I'd like to see a jade gate without a bush.
I'd gamble a boatload of fish against a bucket of shit that it hurt to pull out those hairs.
Uo whistled.
When I'm a kami, I'm going to inhabit Kiku-san's heavenly pavilion. They say she was born perfumed and hairless.
Amid laughter, Uo asked,
Did it make any difference, Mura-san, to attack the jade gate without the bush? It was the nearest I ever got. I got closer and deeper than ever before, and that's important, ne? So I know it's always better for the girl to take off the bush, though some are superstitious about it, and some complain of the itch. It's still closer for you, and so closer for her, and getting close makes all the difference, ne?
They laughed and put their backs into the digging. The pit grew under the rain.
I'll wager the Anjin-san got plenty close last night for her to stand at the gateway like that. What wouldn't I give to have been him?
Uo wiped the sweat off his brow. Like all of them, he wore only a loincloth and a bamboo conical hat, and was barefoot.
I was there, Uo, in the square, and I saw it all. I saw her smile, and I felt it down through my fruit and into my toes.
Yes, another said. I have to admit, just her smile made me stiff as an oar.
But not as big as the Anjin-san, eh, Mura-san?
Uo chuckled.
Go on. Please tell us the story again.
Happily, Mura obliged and told about the first night and the bathhouse. His story had improved in the many tellings, but none of them minded.
"Oh, to be so vast!"
Uo mimed, carrying a giant erection before him, and laughed so much he slipped in the mud.
"Who'd have thought the barbarian stranger'd ever get from the pit to paradise?"
Mura leaned on his shovel a moment, collecting his breath.
"I'd never have believed it. Like an ancient legend. Come on, eh? Perhaps he was one of us in a previous life, and he's come back with the same mind, but a different skin."
Ninjin nodded.
"That's possible. Must be, because from what the Holy Father said, I thought he'd be burning in the devil's hell furnace long since. Didn't the Father say he'd put a special curse on him? I heard him bring down the vengeance of the great Jesus Kami himself on the Anjin-san. And, oh, Ko, even I was very frightened."
He crossed himself, and the others hardly noticed.
"But the Jesus Christ Madonna God punishes his enemies very strangely, if you ask me."
Uo said, "Well, I'm not a Christian, as well you know. But so sorry. It seems to me the Anjin-san's a good man. Please excuse me. And better than the Christian father, who stank and cursed and frightened everyone. And he's been good to us, ne? He treats his people well. Some say he's Lord Toranaga's friend. Must be with all his honours, ne? And don't forget Kiku-san honoured him with her golden gully. It's golden, all right. I heard the night cost him 5 koban. 15 koku for one night?"
Ninjin spluttered.
"Eeh! How lucky the Anjin-san is. His karma's vast for an enemy of God the Father, Son, and Madonna."
Mura said, "He paid 1 koban, 3 koku. But if you think that's a lot..."
He stopped and looked around conspiratorially to make sure there were no eavesdroppers. Though, of course, in this rain, he knew there would be none. And even if there were, what did that matter? They all stopped and moved closer.
"Yes, Mura-san?"
"I just had it whispered to me. She's going to be Lord Toranaga's consort. He bought her contract this morning. 3,000 koku.
It was a mind-boggling figure, more than their whole village earned in fish and rice in 20 years. Their respect for her increased, if that were possible. And for the Anjin-san, who was therefore the last man on earth to enjoy her as a courtesan of the first rank.
"Eeh!" Uo mumbled, hard put to talk. "So much money. I don't know whether I want to vomit, or piss, or fart."
"Do none," said Mura laconically. "Dig. Let's find the swords."
They obeyed, each lost in his own thoughts. Inexorably, the pit was deepening. Soon Ninjin, whipped by worry, could contain himself no longer, and he stopped digging.
"Mura-san, please excuse me, but what have you decided about the new taxes?"
he asked. The others stopped. Mura kept on digging at his methodical, grinding pace.
"What's there to decide? Yabu-sama says pay, so we pay, ne?"
"But Toranaga-sama cut our taxes to 4 parts out of 10, and he's our liege lord now."
"True, but Lord Yabu was given back Izu, and Suruga, and Totomi as well, and made overlord again. So who is our liege lord?"
"Toranaga-sama. Surely, Mura-san,
Are you going to complain to him, Ninjin? Eh? Wake up. Yabu-sama's overlord, as he always was. Nothing's changed. And if he puts up taxes, we pay more taxes. Finish."
"But that'll take all our winter stocks. All of them."
Ninjin's voice was an infuriating whine, but all knew the truth of what he said.
"Even with the rice we stole."
"The rice we've saved,"
Uo hissed at him, correcting him.
"Even with that, there won't be enough to last through winter. We'll have to sell a boat or two."
"We sell no boats,"
Mura said. He jabbed his shovel into the mud and wiped the sweat out of his eyes, retied the string of his hat more firmly. Then he began to dig again.
"Work, Ninjin. That will take your mind off tomorrow."
"How do we last the winter, Mura-san?"
"We still have to get through the summer.
Yes, Ninjin agreed bitterly. We've paid more than 2 years' taxes in advance, and still it's not enough.
Come on, Ninjin, Uo said. War's coming. Perhaps we'll get a new lord who'll be fairer, nay?
Another said. He can't be worse. No one can be worse.
Don't wager on that, Mura told them all. You're alive. You can be very dead very quickly, and then no more golden gullies, with or without the forest.
His shovel hit a rock, and he stopped.
Give me a hand, Uo, old friend.
Together they fought the rock out of the mud. Uo whispered anxiously,
Mura-san, what if the Holy Father asks about the weapons?
Tell him, and tell him we're ready, that Anjiro's ready.
Chapter 42 They came to Yokose by noon. Buntaro had already intercepted Zataki the previous evening, and as Toranaga had ordered, had welcomed him with great formality.
I asked him to camp outside the village to the north, sire, until the meeting place could be prepared, Buntaro said. The formal meeting's to take place here this afternoon, if it pleases you.
He added humorlessly,
I thought the hour of the goat would be auspicious. Good. He wanted to meet you tonight, but I overruled that. I told him you'd be honored to meet today or tomorrow, whichever he wished, but not after dark.
Toranaga grunted approval, but did not yet dismount from his lathered horse. He wore a breastplate, helmet, and light bamboo armor, like his equally travel-stained escort. Again he looked around carefully. The clearing had been well chosen, with no chance for ambush. There were no trees or houses within range that could hide archers or musketeers. Just east of the village, the land was flat and somewhat higher. North, west, and south were guarded by the village and by the wooden bridge that spanned the fast-flowing river. Here at the narrows, the water was swirling and rock-infested. Eastward, behind him and his weary, sweated riders, the track climbed steeply up the pass to the misted crest 5 li away. Mountains towered all around, many volcanic, and most with their peaks sleeping in the overcast. In the center of the clearing, a 12-mat dais had been especially erected on low pilings. A tall rush canopy covered it. Haste did not show in the craftsmanship. Two brocade cushions faced each other on the tatamis.
I've men there, there, and there, Buntaro continued, pointing with his bow at all the overlooking outcrops. You can see for many li in all directions, sire. Good defensive positions. The bridge and the whole village are covered. Eastward, your retreat secured by more men. Of course, the bridge is locked tight with sentries, and I've left an honor guard of 100 men at his camp.
Lord Zataki's there now?
No, sire. I selected an inn for him and his equerries on the outskirts of the village, to the north, worthy of his rank, and invited him to enjoy the baths there. That inn's isolated and secured. I implied you'd be going on to Shuzenji Spa tomorrow and he'd be your guest.
Buntaro indicated a neat single-story inn on the edge of the clearing that faced the best view, near to a hot spring that bubbled from the rock into a natural bath.
That inn's yours, sire.
In front of the inn was a group of men, all on their knees, their heads very low, bowing motionlessly toward them.
They're the headman and village elders. I didn't know if you wanted to see them at once. Later.
Toranaga's horse neighed wearily and cast its head about, the bridles jingling. He gentled him, and now completely satisfied with the security, he signed to his men and dismounted. One of Buntaro's samurai caught his reins. The samurai, like Buntaro and all of them, armored, battle-armed, and ready. Toranaga stretched gratefully and limbered up to ease the cramped muscles in his back and legs. He had led the way from Anjiro in a single forced march, stopping only to change mounts. The rest of the baggage train under Omi's command, palanquins and bearers, was still far behind, strung out on the road that came down from the crest. The road from Anjiro had snaked along the coast, then branched. They had taken the west road inland and climbed steadily through luxuriant forests teeming with game, Mount Omura to their right, the peaks of the volcanic Amagi Range on their left, soaring almost 5,000 feet. The ride had exhilarated him.
At last, some action!
Part of the journey had been through such good hawking country that he promised himself one day he would hunt all Izu.
Good. Yes, very good,
he said over the bustle of his men, dismounting and chattering and sorting themselves out.
You've done well. If you want to honour me, sir, I beg you to allow me to obliterate Lord Zataki and his men at once. He insulted you? No, on the contrary. His manners were worthy of a courtier, but the flag he travels under is a treason against you. Patience! How often do I have to tell you?
Toranaga said, not unkindly.
I'm afraid forever, sire,
Buntaro replied gruffly.
Please excuse me. You used to be his friend. He used to be your ally. He saved your life at Odawara.
We were on the same side at Odawara, Buntaro said bleakly.
Then burst out,
How can he do this to you, sire? Your own brother! Haven't you favored him, fought on the same side, all his life? People change.
Toranaga put his full attention on the dais. Delicate silk curtains had been hung from the rafters over the platform for decoration. Ornamental brocade tassels that matched the cushions made a pleasing frieze, and larger ones were on the four corner posts.
It's much too rich, and gives the meeting too much importance, he said. Make it simple. Remove the curtains, all the tassels and cushions, return them to the merchants, and if they won't give the quartermaster back the money, tell him to sell them. Get four cushions, not two. Simple. Chaff-filled. Yes, sire.
Toranaga's gaze fell on the spring, and he wandered over to it. The water, steaming and sulphurous, hissed as it came from a cleft in the rocks. His body ached for a bath.
And the Christian?
He asked. Sire?
Tsuku-san, the Christian priest. Oh, him. He's somewhere in the village, but the other side of the bridge. He's forbidden this side without your permission. Why? Is it important? He said something about how he'd be honored to see you, when convenient. Do you want him here now? Was he alone?
Buntaro's lip curled.
No. He had an escort of 20 acolytes, all tonsured like him. All Kyushu men, sire. All well-born, and all samurai. All well-mounted, but no weapons. I had them searched. Thoroughly. And him? Of course him. Him more than any. There were four carrier pigeons among his luggage. I confiscated them. Good. Destroy them. Some fool did it in error. So sorry, ne? I understand. You want me to send for him now? Later. I'll see him later.
Buntaro frowned.
Was it wrong to search him?
Toranaga shook his head and absently looked back at the crest, lost in thought. Then he said,
Send a couple of men we can trust to watch the musket regiment. I've already done that, sire.
Buntaro's face lit up with grim satisfaction.
And Lord Yabu's personal guards contain some of our ears and eyes. He won't be able to fart without your knowing it, if that's your wish.
Good.
The head of the baggage train, still far distant, rounded a bend in the curling track. Toranaga could see the three palanquins. Omi mounted in the lead as ordered, the engine sand beside him now, also riding easily. He turned his back on them.
I've brought your wife with me. Yes, sire. She's asking my permission to go to Osaka.
Buntaro stared at him, but said nothing. Then he squinted back at the barely discernible figures.
I gave her my approval, providing, of course, that you also approve. Whatever you approve, sire, I approve, Buntaro said. I can allow her to go by land from Mishima, or she can accompany the Anjin-san to Edo, and go by sea to Osaka from there. The Anjin-san's agreed to be responsible for her, if you approve. It would be safer by sea.
Buntaro was smoldering.
This all depends on Lord Zataki's message. If Ishido's formally declared war on me, then, of course, I must forbid it. If not, your wife can go on tomorrow or the day after, if you approve. Whatever you decide, I agree to. This afternoon, pass over your duties to Naga-san. This is a good moment to make peace between you and your wife. Please excuse me, sire. I should stay with my men. I beg you to leave me with my men, until you're safely away. Tonight, you will pass over your duties to my son. You and your wife will join me at my evening meal. You will stay at the inn. You will make a peace.
Buntaro stared at the ground. Then he said, even more stonily,
Yes, sire. You're ordered to attempt a peace, said Toranaga.
He was in a mind to add,
An honorable peace is better than war, ne?
But that wasn't true, and might have begun a philosophic argument, and he was tired and wanted no arguments, just a bath and a rest.
Now fetch the headman.
The headman and elders fell over themselves in their haste to bow before him, welcoming him in the most extravagant way. Toranaga told them bluntly that the bill they would present to his quartermaster when he left would, of course, be fair and reasonable.
Nah?
Hi, they chorused humbly, blessing the gods for their unexpected good fortune and the fat pickings that this visit would inevitably bring them. With many more bows and compliments, saying how proud and honored they were to be allowed to serve the greatest daimyo in the empire, the sprightly old headman ushered him into the inn. Toranaga inspected it completely, through coveys of bowing, smiling maids of all ages, the pick of the village. There were 10 rooms around a nondescript garden with a small char house in the center, kitchens in the back and to the west, nestling the rocks, a large bathhouse fed from the living springs. The whole inn was neatly fenced. A covered walk led to the bath, and it was easy to defend.
I don't need the whole inn, Buntaro-san, he said, standing again on the veranda. 3 rooms will be sufficient. 1 for myself, 1 for the Anjin-san, and 1 for the women. You take a 4th. There's no need to pay for the rest.
My quartermaster tells me he made a very good arrangement for the whole inn, sire, day by day, better than half price, and it's still out of season. I approved the cost because of your security.
Very well, Toranaga agreed reluctantly. But I want to see the bill before we leave. There's no need to waste money. You'd better fill the rooms with guards. 4 to a room.
Yes, sire.
Buntaro had already decided to do that. He watched Toranaga stride off with 2 personal guards, surrounded by 4 of the prettiest maids, to go to his room in the east wing. Dully, he was wondering,
What women? What women needed the room? Who'd you call?
Never mind, he thought tiredly. I'll know soon enough.
A maid fluttered past. She smiled brightly at him, and he smiled back mechanically. She was young and pretty and soft-skinned, and he had pillowed with her last night. But the joining had given him no pleasure, and though she was deft and enthusiastic and well-trained, his lust soon vanished. He had never felt desire for her. Eventually, for the sake of good manners, he had pretended to reach the pinnacle, as she had pretended, and then she had left him. Still brooding, he walked out of the courtyard to stare up at the road.
Why Osaka?
At the hour of the goat, the sentries on the bridge stood aside. The cortege began to cross. First were heralds carrying banners, bedecked with the all-powerful cipher of the regents, then the rich palanquin, and finally more guards. Villagers bowed. All were on their knees, secretly agog at such richness and pomp. The headman had cautiously asked if he should assemble all their people to honor the occasion. Toranaga had sent a message that those who were not working could watch, with their master's permission. So the headman, with even more care, had selected a deputation that included mostly the old and the obedient young, just enough to make a show, though every adult would have liked to be present, but not enough to go against the great daimyo's orders. All who could were watching surreptitiously from vantage points in windows and doors. Saigawa Zataki, Lord of Shinano, was taller than Toranaga and younger by 5 years, with the same breadth of shoulders and prominent nose. But his stomach was flat, the stubble of his beard black and heavy, his eyes mere slits in his face. though there seemed to be an uncanny resemblance between the half-brothers when they were apart. Now that they were together, they were quite dissimilar. Sataki's kimono was rich, his armor glittering and ceremonial, his swords well used.
"Welcome, brother."
Torunaga stepped off the dais and bowed. He wore the simplest of kimonos and soldier's straw sandals. And swords.
"Please excuse me for receiving you so informally, but I came as quickly as I could.
Please excuse me for disturbing you. You look well, brother. Very well."
Sataki got out of the palanquin and bowed in return, beginning the interminable, meticulous formalities of the ceremonial that now ruled both of them.
"Please take this cushion, Lord Sataki."
"Please excuse me. I would be honored if you would be seated first, Lord Torunaga."
"You're so kind. But please, honor me by sitting first."
They continued playing the game that they had played so many times before, with each other and with friends and enemies, climbing the ladder of power, enjoying the rules that governed each movement and each phrase, that protected their individual honor, so that neither could ever make a mistake and endanger himself or his mission. At length, they were seated opposite each other on the cushions, two sword lengths away. Puntaro was behind and to the left of Torunaga. Sataki's chief aide, an elderly grey-haired samurai, was behind and to his left. Around the dais, 20 paces away, were seated ranks of Torunaga samurai, all deliberately still costumed in the clothing they'd journeyed in, but their weapons in perfect condition. Omi was seated on the earth at the edge of the dais, Naga at the opposite side. Sataki's men were dressed formally and richly, their vast wing-shouldered overmantles belted with silver buckles. But they were equally well-armed. They settled themselves, also 20 paces away. Mariko served ceremonial char, and there was innocuous formal conversation between the two brothers. At the correct time, Mariko bowed and left, Buntaro achingly aware of her and vastly proud of her grace and beauty. And then, too soon, Sataki said brusquely,
"I bring orders from the Council of Regents."
A sudden hush fell on the square. Everyone, even his own men, was aghast at Sataki's lack of manners, at the insolent way he had said orders and not message, and at his failure to wait for Torunaga to ask,
"How can I be of service?"
as ceremony demanded. Naga shot a quick glance away from Zataki's sword arm to his father. He saw the flush on Torunaga's neck that was an infallible sign of impending explosion. But Torunaga's face was tranquil, and Naga was amazed as he heard the controlled reply.
"So sorry. You have orders? For whom, brother? Surely you have a message."
Sataki ripped two small scrolls out of his sleeve. Buntaro's hand almost flashed for his waiting sword at the unexpected suddenness, for ritual called for all movements to be slow and deliberate. Torunaga had not moved. Sataki broke the seal of the first scroll and read in a loud, chilling voice,
"By order of the Council of Regents, in the name of Emperor Go-Nijo, the Son of Heaven, we greet our illustrious vassal, Yoshi Torunaga no Minowara, and invite him to make obeisance before us in Osaka forthwith, and invite him to inform our illustrious ambassador, the regent, Lord Saigawa Sataki, if our invitation is accepted or refused. Forthwith."
He looked up, and in an equally loud voice continued,
"It's signed by all regents, and sealed with the great seal of the realm."
Haughtily, he placed the scroll in front of him. Torunaga signaled to Buntaro, who went forward, bowed low to Sataki, picked up the scroll, turned to Torunaga, bowed again. Torunaga accepted the scroll and motioned Buntaro back to his place. Torunaga studied the scroll interminably.
"All the signatures are genuine," Sataki said. "Do you accept or refuse?"
In a subdued voice, so that only those on the dais and Omi and Naga could hear him, Torunaga said,
"Why shouldn't I take your head for your foul manners?"
"Because I'm my mother's son," Sataki replied.
"That won't protect you if you continue this way."
"Then she'll die before her time."
"What?"
The lady, our mother, is in Takato.
Takato was the landlocked, impregnable fortress and capital city of Shinano, Sataki's province.
I regret her body will stay there forever. Bluff! You honor her as much as I do. On her immortal spirit, brother, as much as I honor her, I detest what you're doing to the realm even more.
I seek no more territory, and no...
You seek to overthrow the succession.
Wrong again. And I'll always protect my nephew from traitors.
You seek the heir's downfall. That is what I believe. So I've decided to stay alive and lock Shinano and the northern route against you, whatever the cost. And I'll continue to do that until the Kanto's in friendly hands, whatever the cost.
In your hands, brother?
Any safe hands, which excludes yours, brother.
You trust Ishido?
I trust no one. You've taught me that. Ishido's Ishido, but his loyalty's unquestioned. Even you'll admit that.
I'll admit that Ishido's trying to destroy me and split the realm, that he's usurped power, and that he's breaking the Taiko's will.
But you did plot with Lord Sugiyama to wreck the Council of Regents, ne?
The vein in Zataki's forehead was throbbing like a black worm.
What can you say? One of his counselors admitted the treason, that you plotted with Sugiyama for him to accept Lord Ito in your place, then to resign the day before the first meeting and escape by night, and so throw the realm into confusion. I heard the confession, brother.
Were you one of the murderers?
Sataki flushed.
Overzealous Ronin killed Sugiyama, not I, nor any of Ishido's men.
Curious that you took his place as regent so quickly, eh?
No. My lineage is as ancient as yours, but I didn't order the death, nor did Ishido. He swore it on his honor as a samurai. So do I. Ronin killed Sugiyama, but he deserved to die.
By torture, dishonored in a filthy cellar, his children and consorts hacked up in front of him?
That's a rumor, spread by filthy malcontents, perhaps by your spies, to discredit Lord Ishido, and through him, the Lady Ochiba and the heir. There's no proof of that.
Look at their bodies.
The Ronin set fire to the house. There are no bodies.
So convenient, Nier. How can you be so gullible? You're not a stupid peasant.
I refuse to sit here and listen to this manure. Give me your answer now, and then either take my head and she dies, or let me go.
Sataki leaned forward.
Within moments of my head leaving my shoulders, 10 carrier pigeons will be racing north for Takato. I have trustworthy men north, east, and west, a day's march away, out of your reach. And if they fail, there are more in safety across your borders. If you take my head, or have me assassinated, or if I die in Izu, whatever the reason, she dies also. Now, either take my head, or let's finish the giving of the scrolls, and I'll leave Izu at once. Choose!
Ishido murdered Lord Sugiyama. In time, I can get you proof. That's important, eh? I only need a little...
You've no more time. Forthwith, the message said. Of course, you refuse to obey. Good. So it's done. Here.
Sataki put the second scroll on the tatamis.
Here's your formal impeachment, an order to commit seppuku, which you'll treat with equal contempt. May Lord Buddha forgive you. Now everything's done. I'll leave at once. And the next time we meet will be on a battlefield. And by the Lord Buddha, before sunset on the same day, I've promised myself I'll see your head on a spike.
Torunaga kept his eyes on his adversary.
Lord Sugiyama was your friend and mine. Our comrade, as honorable a samurai as ever lived. The truth about his death should be of importance to you.
Yours has more importance, brother.
Ishido sucked you in like a starving infant at its mother's tit.
Sataki turned to his counselor.
On your honor as a samurai, have I posted men, and what is the message?
The gray-haired, dignified old samurai chief of Zataki's confidence and well-known to Torunaga as an honorable man, felt sickened and ashamed by the blatant display of hatred, as was everyone within hearing.
"So sorry, Lord," he said in a choked whisper, bowing to Torunaga. "But my master is, of course, telling the truth. How could this be questioned? And please excuse me, but it is my duty, with all honor and humility, to point out to both of you that such astonishing and shameful lack of politeness between you is not worthy of your rank or the solemnity of this occasion. If your vassals, if they could have heard, I doubt if either of you could have held them back. You forget your duty as samurai and your duty to your men. Please excuse me."
He bowed to both of them.
"But it had to be said."
Then he added, "All messages were the same, Lord Torunaga, and under the official seal of Lord Zataki. Put the lady, my mother, to death at once."
"How can I prove I'm not trying to overthrow the heir?"
Torunaga asked his brother.
"Immediately abdicate all your titles and power to your son and heir, Lord Sudara, and commit seppuku today. Then I and all my men, to the last man, will support Sudara as Lord of the Kanto."
"I'll consider what you've said."
"Eh?
I'll consider what you've said."
Torunaga repeated it more firmly.
"We'll meet tomorrow at this time, if it pleases you."
Zataki's face twisted.
"Is this another of your tricks? What's there to meet about?"
"About what you said, and about this."
Torunaga held up the scroll that was in his hand.
"I'll give you my answer tomorrow."
"Buntaro-san,"
Zataki motioned at the second scroll.
"Please give this to your master."
"No!"
Torunaga's voice reverberated around the clearing. Then, with great ceremony, he added loudly,
"I am honored formally to accept the council's message, and will submit my answer to their illustrious ambassador, my brother, the Lord of Shinano, tomorrow at this time."
Zataki stared at him suspiciously.
"What possible answer?"
"Please excuse me, Lord,"
the old samurai interrupted quietly, with grave dignity, again keeping the conversation private.
"So sorry, but Lord Torunaga is perfectly correct to suggest this. It is a solemn choice you have given him, a choice not contained in the scrolls. It is fair and honorable that he should be given the time he requires."
Zataki picked up the second scroll and shoved it back into his sleeve.
"Very well, I agree. Lord Torunaga, please excuse my bad manners. Lastly, please tell me where Kashigi Yabu is. I've a scroll for him. Only one in his case. I'll send him to you."
The falcon closed her wings and fell 1,000 feet out of the evening sky and smashed into the fleeing pigeon with a burst of feathers, then caught it in her talons and carried it earthward, still falling like a stone. And then, a few feet off the ground, she released her now dead prey, braked frantically, and landed on it perfectly.
"Ek-ek-ek-ek!"
she shrieked, fluttering her neck feathers in pride, her talons ripping off the pigeon's head in her ecstasy of conquest. Torunaga, with Naga as his equerry, galloped up. The daimyo slid off his horse. He called her gently to Fist. Obediently, she stepped up onto his glove. At once, she was rewarded with a morsel of flesh from a previous kill. He slipped on her hood, tightening the thongs with his teeth. Naga picked up the pigeon and put it into the half-full game bag that hung from his father's saddle, then turned and beckoned to the distant beaters and guards. Torunaga got back into the saddle, the falcon comfortably on his glove, held by her thin leather jesses. He looked up into the sky, measuring the light still remaining. In the late afternoon, the sun had broken through, and now in the valley, the day dying fast, the sun long since bedded by the western crest, it was cool and pleasant. The clouds were northward, pushed there by the dominant wind, hovering over the mountain peaks and hiding many. At this altitude, landlocked, the air was clean and sweet.
We should have a good day tomorrow, Naga-san. Cloudless, I'd imagine. I think I'll hunt with the dawn.
Yes, father.
Naga watched him, perplexed, afraid to ask questions as always, yet wanting to know everything. He could not fathom how his father could be so detached after such a hideous meeting. To bow Satake away with the due ceremony, then, at once, to summon his hawks and beaters and guards and halloo them away to the rolling hills beyond the forest, seemed to Naga to be an unearthly display of self-control. Just the thought of Satake made Naga's flesh crawl now, and he knew that the old counselor was right. If one-tenth of the conversation had been overheard, samurai would have leapt to defend their lord's honor. If it weren't for the threat that hung over his revered grandmother's head, he would have rushed at Satake himself.
I suppose that's why my father is what he is, and is where he is, he thought.
His eyes picked out horsemen breaking from the forest below, and galloping up toward them over the rolling foothills. Beyond the dark green of the forest, the river was a twisted ribbon of black. The lights in the inns blinked like fireflies.
Father! Eh? Ah, yes, I see them now. Who are they? Yabu-san, Umi-san, and 8 guards. Your eyes are better than mine. Ah, yes, now I recognize them.
Naga said without thinking,
I wouldn't have let Yabu-san go alone to Lord Satake without...
He stopped and stuttered,
Please excuse me. Why wouldn't you have sent Yabu-san alone?
Naga cursed himself for opening his mouth and quailed under Torunaga's gaze.
Please excuse me, because then I'd never know what secret arrangement they would have made. He could, father, easily. I would have kept them apart. Please excuse me. I don't trust him.
If Yabu-san and Satake-san plan treachery behind my back, they'll do it whether I send a witness or not. Sometimes it's wiser to give a quarry extra line. That's how to catch a fish, ne?
Yes, please excuse me.
Torunaga realized that his son didn't understand, would never understand, would always be merely a hawk to hurl at an enemy, swift, sharp, and deadly.
I'm glad you understand, my son,
he said to encourage him, knowing his good qualities and valuing them.
You're a good son, he added, meaning it.
Thank you, father,
Naga said, filled with pride at the rare compliment.
I only hope you'll forgive my stupidities and teach me to serve you better.
You're not stupid.
Yabu's stupid,
Torunaga almost added.
The less people know, the better. And it's not necessary to stretch your mind, Naga. You're so young.
My youngest, but for your half-brother, Tadateru.
How old is he? Seven. Yes, he'd be 7.
He watched the approaching horseman a moment.
How's your mother, Naga?
As always, the happiest lady in the world. She'll still only let me see her once a year. Can't you persuade her to change?
No, said Torunaga. She'll never change.
Torunaga always felt a glow when he thought of Chano Tsubone, his 8th official consort and Naga's mother. He laughed to himself as he remembered her earthy humor, her dimpled cheeks and saucy bottom, the way she wriggled and the enthusiasm of her pillowing. She had been the widow of a farmer near Edo who had attracted him 20 years ago. She had stayed with him 3 years, then asked to be allowed to return to the land. He had allowed her to go. Now she lived on a good farm near where she was born, fat and content, a dowager Buddhist nun, honored by all and beholden to none. Once in a while, he would go to see her, and they would laugh together, without reason, friends.
Ah, she's a good woman,
Torunaga said. Yabu and Omi rode up and dismounted. 10 paces away, they stopped and bowed.
He gave me a scroll,
Yabu said, enraged, brandishing it.
We invite you to leave Izu at once for Osaka, today, and present yourself at Osaka Castle for an audience. For all your lands are now forfeit, and you are hereby declared outlaw.
He crushed the scroll in his fist and threw it on the ground.
Today! Then you'd better leave at once,
Torunaga said, suddenly in a foul humor at Yabu's truculence and stupidity.
Sire, I beg you,
Omi began hastily, dropping abjectly to his knees.
Lord Yabu's your devoted vassal, and I beg you humbly not to taunt him. Forgive me for being so rude, but Lord Zataki, forgive me for being so rude.
Yabu-san, please excuse the remark. It was meant kindly,
Toranaga said, cursing his lapse.
We should all have a sense of humor about such messages, ne?
He called up his falconer, gave him the bird from his fist, dismissed him and the beaters. Then he waved all samurai except Naga out of earshot, squatting on his haunches, and bade them do the same.
Perhaps you'd better tell me what happened.
Yabu said,
there's almost nothing to tell. I went to see him. He received me with the barest minimum of courtesy. First, there were greetings from Lord Ishido, and a blunt invitation to ally myself secretly with him, to plan your immediate assassination, and to murder every Toranaga samurai in Izu. Of course, I refused to listen, and at once, without any courtesy whatsoever, he handed me that.
His fingers stabbed belligerently toward the scroll.
If it hadn't been for your direct order protecting him, I'd have hacked him to pieces at once. I demand you rescind that order. I cannot live with this shame. I must have revenge.
Is that everything that happened?
Isn't that enough?
Toranaga passed over Yabu's rudeness and scowled at Omi.
You're to blame, eh? Why didn't you have the intelligence to protect your lord better? You're supposed to be an advisor. You should have been his shield. You should have drawn Lord Zataki into the open, tried to find out what Ishido had in mind, what the bribe was, what plans they had. You're supposed to be a valued counselor. You're given a perfect opportunity, and you waste it like an unpracticed dullard.
Omi bent his head.
Please excuse me, sire.
I might, but I don't see why Lord Yabu should. Now your lord's accepted the scroll. Now he's committed. Now he has to act one way or the other.
What? Said Yabu.
Why else do you think I did what I did?
To delay. Of course, to delay, said Toranaga. That's one day. What's the value of one day?
Yabu asked.
Who knows? A day for you is one less for the enemy.
Toranaga's eyes snapped back to Omi.
Was the message from Ishido verbal or in writing?
Yabu answered instead.
Verbal, of course.
Toranaga kept his penetrating gaze on Omi.
You failed in your duty to your lord and to me.
Please excuse.
What exactly did you say?
Omi did not reply.
Have you forgotten your manners as well? What did you say?
Nothing, sir. I said nothing.
What?
Yabu blustered.
He said nothing to Zataki because he wasn't present. Zataki asked to speak to me alone.
Oh?
Toranaga hid his glee that Yabu had had to admit what he had already surmised, and that part of the truth was now in the open.
Please excuse me, Omi-san. I naturally presumed you were present.
It was my error, sir. I should have insisted. You're correct. I failed to protect my lord,
Omi said.
I should have been more forceful. Please excuse me. Yabu-sama, please excuse me.
Before Yabu could answer, Toranaga said,
Of course you're forgiven, Omi-san. If your lord overruled you, that's his privilege. You did overrule him, Yabu-sama.
Yes, yes, but I didn't think it mattered. You think I...
Well, the harm's done now. What do you plan to do?
Of course, dismiss the message for what it is, sire.
Yabu was disquieted.
You think I could have avoided taking it?
Of course. You could have negotiated with him for a day, maybe more, weeks even,
Toranaga added, turning the knife deeper into the wound, maliciously delighted that Yabu's own stupidity had thrust him onto the hook. and not at all concerned with the treachery Yabu had undoubtedly been bribed into.